Good morning, ECC fans. We're on to season one, episode six of the East Coast Conference podcast, a platform through which we tell the stories of our ECC student athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Molloy University women's volleyball is having a season, currently 11-5 overall and at the top of the ECC with an unblemished 4-0 record in conference play at the time of this recording. Leading that pack of Lions is graduate student setter, Julia Zalta. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you so much, Nikki. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Jay-Z. Do people call you Jay-Z? Is that a nickname or no?
When I was younger, a little bit, but now not so much. My teammates and coaches just kind of called me Jules. So,
fair enough. Julia, Jules, Molloy started the season by winning six of its first seven matches, then came a three-match losing skid before winning five of its last six, which includes a 4-0 ECC record. So up, down, and now back up. What does this team have this year that enables you to drop a few and be able to bounce back with such dominance?
Yeah, I think we just have the belief that we could do it. You know, there's highs and lows within every team and every season. And to look across 1 through 14 of us and to know that everyone on the team believes that we can accomplish it and we can work our way back to where we want to be. And we set a list of controllables that we want to be able to achieve this season. And these are things non-volleyball related. So as long as we're holding ourselves accountable for off-the-court stuff, culture stuff, then the volleyball just kind of plays its path out. So just that belief that we can all do it and controlling the controllables.
Eight of those 11 wins that I just mentioned have come at home in Rockville Center, New York. What is it about playing on Bob Houlihan Court that sets your squad up for success? Is there a bit more confidence with the familiarity that comes with playing at home for your team?
I'd say that everyone loves playing at home. You don't have to travel, no van ride, bus ride, whatever it may be. So starting off the season at home was really that home court advantage. And we may go into other gyms that are larger in size and have a different volume to it, but there's such security and confidence that comes from playing at home, the same place we practice, same nets, same setup, and just looking each other in the eyes and knowing, you know, everyone that's here deserves to be here and wants to be here, and getting to wake up a little bit later and kind of stroll in from class or whatever it may be is definitely super nice. So it's always fun playing at home. Home games are always super fun, and it's nice when we can get, you know, parents coming or fans, peers, professors, whoever it may be.
Molloy took down last year's ECC regular season co-champions, Damon and Queens. Molloy took down ECC defending tournament champion, DUville. Blanked Roberts Wesleyan this past weekend. Molloy was ECC tournament runner-up in 2022 and 2023, tournament champions in 2017-2019. Vibes have to be high right now with the start of conference play. Will we see the Lions on championship Saturday on November 22nd?
I think that's our goal, and that's been our goal. And every year we could say that that's the goal, and we didn't have, you know, the right pieces that were put together last year to do so. Coming in, we have a fresh start, and we have all 14 of us that want to make it there. And obviously every team's goal is to win the conference, but it's baby steps. It's game by game. And every team in the conference has been super competitive, and every single team could take anyone down. So to, you know, win against teams that may have won in years past and to go up to Buffalo and to have a 2-0 weekend up there, that was super huge. Damon's always super competitive and brings a lot of energy. So to go into their home gym and play some of our best volleyball of the season was super rewarding. At the end of the day, you know, it's anyone's game. And if we stay with our beliefs and, you know, that desire that we're able to take down anyone that comes in our gym, not just, you know, an ECC opponent, but a regional, you know, opponent or anyone that we play against, I think that, yeah, it's a no-brainer that that's our goal, to make it back to the championship tournament and, of course, to win it as well.
Talked about having the right pieces this year. Your role, your piece of the puzzle has changed a little bit. You lead Molloy and rank in the ECC's top five this year with 336 assists and 30 service aces, but you also rank top five on your squad in kills, digs, blocks. You're also one of just two ECC players right now to record a triple-double this year, which really speaks to your versatility. How has your role changed on the court this year from years past?
Yes. Yeah, so coming into college, I had been recruited as a setter and just a setter. So prior to that, becoming a setter, I was just, you know, a hitter, pin hitter, so outside or right side. And it was never my intent to go to college and be a hitter. I never thought I was good enough or tall enough or whatever it may be. But yeah, getting that opportunity this year has been huge. Like, I know my teammates trust me. I know my coaches trust me out there, and I'm just trying to have as much fun as possible. I'll never get this opportunity again. So knowing that every game, got to play it like it's my last, has been super fun, and all my teammates get super hyped for me when I get a kill. So to know that, like, looking around and anyone could be in any role, and to be able to fill that role for my teammates has been super great. Just knowing that I have that support behind me.
You're a native of Great Neck, New York, just about 10 miles north of Molloy. You were named to Newsday's Top 25 Long Island Volleyball Players list out of high school, but you began your collegiate career at the Division I level at the University of Delaware. When you decided to come home after that first year, what made you decide on Molloy?
Deciding on Molloy was mainly the opportunity to continue playing and also continue my education, which has always come first for me. And then volleyball coming second. I knew I wanted to continue playing. So transferring home, I never pictured myself staying at home. And Molloy, similar to a lot of the schools in the UCC, is more of a commuter school. So to be able to live at home or dorm at school or live off campus, getting all of those opportunities and getting a feel for what that would be like was super unique. And then also just continuing on with my major. I graduated last May with my Bachelor of Science in Management and my minor in Economics. And the career that I've been able to build academically on Long Island has been super great. And I think that opportunity is super unique. And then obviously, I've met some of my best friends through Molloy Volleyball and also my involvement outside of volleyball as well, just being a student and just jobs I've had on campus or people that I've been able to meet because of being at Molloy. I, would never take that for granted. So I'm so happy I ended up choosing Molloy.
This kind of rolls right into our next question, so I appreciate you there. As you pursue your MBA in healthcare administration from Molloy, what can you say overall about your Division II experience of being a student athlete within the East Coast Conference? You kind of mentioned your studies come first, athletics come second, really the whole messaging of Division II. So can you speak to that?
Yeah, I would definitely say that at the Division II level, with time commitments being a little bit different and our travel needs being just slightly different, there's more time to focus on your career. The sport will always be there, but unless you're taking it to the professional level, your career has to come first. And being able to go from a place where volleyball was everything and you ended up missing a lot of education for that to now so many of my teammates have off campus or on campus jobs, and that opportunity comes from our schedule and the ability to partake in community events and career events, a lot of which the ECC pushes for us to do, especially with going on 5K walks to raise money for a certain event or cause. And that's been super huge. I've been able to really take part in my community. And that's something that I didn't know how much opportunity I'd get. I've also been able to lead clubs in school. I never thought I'd have time to do that. Have an on-campus job, have an off-campus job. These are opportunities that I've been able to get at the Division II level while also meeting hundreds of people and networking with so many different people to get a jump start in my career. This week alone, I'm speaking to two individuals who I've met just through speaking to people at my school or even in the conference. I've met people that know others that work at local hospitals. So not only being on Long Island, where there's such a hub of hospitals where I'd love to stay and get a job opportunity in the next couple of months, but also just who and how I've been able to meet those people. That's been super unique about that Division II experience.
Phenomenal. And you did mention walks on campus. Will you and your squad be participating in the Team Impact All-In 5K this Sunday?
Oh, we will actually be participating in a Strides for Breast Cancer walk. If we make it in time, you will 100% see us there. And we had partaken in that the past two or three seasons, when we had had a Team Impact athlete signed to our team. So that's also been something that's been super rewarding to not only have the ability to have a Team Impact athlete on our team, but also be able to spend time with them outside of, volleyball events.
We've got one final non-volleyball related question for you, just so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. You list acai bowls as your favorite food in your bio on Molloy's website. For our listeners who want to be just like Julia Zalta, can you build for us your ideal acai bowl?
Yes, I will say I think freshman year me had put that in there, and I've yet to change it, so I'm not too much of a acai bowl, connoisseur, if you will. But here and there, when I get it, just your typical base, but also I'll add in nuts as a source of protein in it, and some granola and fresh fruits like strawberries, blueberries, banana, and some honey for a sweet touch.
There you go. Julia and the Lions head out of conference to see some regional competition at Adelphi tonight, but do return home to host Mercy in ECC action this Saturday at noon. Fans can tune into the action on Flow College. Julia, we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule this morning to join us on the East Coast Conference podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
The East Coast Conference has announced a new partnership with TicketSauce, a cutting-edge event ticketing and marketing platform designed to support athletic programs, campus events, and fan engagement as its ticketing platform for all ticketed 2025-26 ECC championships. Included in this collaboration are a modern, mobile-friendly ticketing experience, flexible on-site and online ticketing tools, custom branding and white label support, and more. TicketSauce, a proud partner of the East Coast Conference. Our second guest is our first coach on the East Coast Conference podcast, the head coach of the College of Staten Island's men's and women's cross country and track and field programs, Akil St. Louis. Good morning, Akil.
Morning, morning. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Akil, you took over as the Dolphins head coach in August of 2023 with one huge goal, right? To reestablish the cross country and track and field programs at Staten Island. When you accepted the position, you said it was the right time and the right situation to build something successful. You're certainly doing that. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so it was actually a funny story how everything kind of like worked out. I was coaching at Alliance University that I was NIAC College. The school ended up closing. I went to Buffalo Wild Wings, a little shout out for Buffalo Wild Wings, but I was at Buffalo Wild Wings and I walked to the bathroom and then I noticed one of my former athletes, Sam Pope. Sam came up to me. He was like, "Oh, coach, you should go back and coach at the College of Staten Island." I was kind of like thinking about it. I had other opportunities that were in the works, but you know, without seeing him and guiding me to make the right decision, as long as my parents, I was able to go back, and it actually worked out the way that it was supposed to. And that's what I mentioned before about, you know, it was the right time to get back and coaching at the collegiate level.
At last year's ECC Indoor Track and Field Championships at the Ocean Breeze Athletic Complex in Staten Island, both the men's and the women's teams earned their highest placements in program history, which was phenomenal. The men placed fourth out of eight teams and the women placed sixth out of 10 teams. A huge moment for the Dolphins was the men's 4x400 meter relay, where the stage was set for Caron Riley to race down Holy Family's anchor for the victory. The place went crazy. I saw you with the proudest look on your face, but I don't think the win was just about the 10 points for you. I just feel like there was more there. What was it?
You know, for me, it was more about just representing Staten Island. It felt like all the hard work that our athletes put in, our coaches put in, you know, really all culminated into one successful day for all of us. Me being a Staten Island resident, a Staten Island native, to see them cross the line, to see so much excitement and jubilation, and we had about 40, you know, families and friends come out to come and cheer us on. That meant the world to me. It was very emotional. Our student athletes really worked very, very hard. Eber worked very, very hard. He was named the athlete of the week a couple of times. Karan obviously was a huge success. Had a really good freshman campaign. Stephen Elcock has been really, really running well, and he was an athlete that we had at NIAC as well. So you know, to see that come together, that felt like a team victory and less of just a 4x4. We celebrated that, and I was really proud of the group as a whole. Not only the sprinters, but the distance group, our throwers. It was a huge victory for all of us. Our program has came a long way. You know, as you know. When I first came on board, we only had about eight or nine student athletes. And I vividly remember my first year after ECC conference, cross country conference at Roberts. You came up to me and you were like, "Coach, where did you get this kid from Arkansas?" And we placed fourth that year in cross, and I was really excited. From 2023 team to 2024 team was really, it was just felt like a whole collaboration of everyone just working together and us celebrating that huge monumental win for our program.
You know, a theme in a couple of these podcasts with cross country guests is the idea of delayed gratification, right? In a world that is so yearning for that instant gratification. This is definitely a story of delayed gratification for Staten Island cross country and track and field, where you started and you can clearly see the progress that's been made.
Definitely. We've come a long way. I've been at programs and I've been at other institutions where kind of had to do the same model here. In each program that I was at, whether it be at Bishop Ford High School in Brooklyn, St. Joseph High School in Brooklyn, Curtis, I was a volunteer coach at Long Island University. It was all about building a program and building it the right way. So here it was a little bit different. So it was all about kind of like building it as a high school program in our first year, making it more fun, more collaborative, doing things outside of track and field. The second year, that's what we really wanted to turn on the jets. The third year is kind of like replicating what we did last year. So kind of like exactly what you said, delaying the gratification, even though we're in a society when our student athletes want instant gratification. So it's important that me as a head coach to kind of slow things down, make it more rudimentary and have things happen, at a slower pace. And we're getting to see that now here at the College of Staten Island.
This fall, your third cross country season, it's the women's cross country squad who is off to a promising start. The Dolphins play second at the Golden Eagle Invitational on September 13th and are being led by two-time ECC Rookie of the Week at this point, Adriana Roa, who has shattered your program's 5K and 6K program records in what, four meets maybe?
For me too, yeah.
You're coming off of an appearance at the NJIT Highlander Invitational this past weekend, where the women as a group posted the best average time in program history for 5K. That's got to be a
Yeah.
great feeling heading into the conference meet. What's going right for the Distance Dolphins right now?
They're very, very disciplined, both our women's and our men's programs. As you said, led by Adriana Roy. Adriana is she's a work, she works very, very hard, comes from a great family. I happened to meet her through the running school. So the running school is a huge camp that goes on every year in upstate New York, close to Woodstock. To go out there and recruit her was a great process. And for her to believe in, what we're doing here was even fantastic for our program. Our women's program is going very well. They're very disciplined. They work hard. And I'm very, very proud of each and every one of them. Even today we had 5:45 in the morning practice, and they were there ready to go. That's what matters, is that we have a good team, a good women's program that is willing to work and do well. Also, our men program is doing fantastic as well. Peter Galata is running very well. He's a freshman. Kevin Dio, Jay Aramis, Matt Amato, Pedro, Walter, all those guys on the men's side has been running well along with our women. So it's very encouraging to see them at practice. They always encourage each other. They all wait to see how they all did from the first person to the last person. That stuff is important to build a culture, build continuity. And that's one thing that I was kind of preaching this year, is about changing the culture and getting coaches that are willing to buy into that, and student athletes that are willing to buy into that as well. So our conference is very competitive on the cross country side. So we have to pick up the pace and hang with those top teams in our conference. So it's not an easy task, but we'll do the best we can. We're a small program, but a small program of fighters. So that's the one thing that I'm very encouraged and happy for.
You mentioned small program, small roster size. Of your 17 runners between the two cross country programs, 16 are from New York, five from Staten Island, four from the Bronx, two from Queens, two from Brooklyn, etc. Is that a conscientious decision to recruit primarily locally and have those New York student athletes on your team?
Yeah, so this is now my 17th year coaching. I was mostly coaching at the high school level. I only started coaching at the collegiate level back in 2019. So all those relationships that I've had over the years is kind of like working in our favor. For years, I wanted to coach track and field. So when I graduated LIU back in 2009 with a degree in coaching and conditioning and all the philosophy and learning how to be a better coach, I went out to California and I really got to understand how to be a better coach and how to be a better person for our student athletes. It's not only about coaching for me, it's about mentorship and guiding our athletes to, better careers and better jobs, whatever the case is. And then when I came back, it was very easy. It's very seamless. So, just gaining those connections from out west in California and gaining the connections that I had out here in New York really, really helped. Us being a public institution helps. Our tuition is a little bit lower, so that helps with, trying to get kids in state. So for me to go out to the Bronx and go out to Long Island and go out to the Brooklyn and all the other places, it helps us. So That's something that I really, really focus on is using those connections that I've had for the past few years to help us, you know, build a roster and build a program so it's, you know, competitive and fun and successful at the same time.
With the success your student athletes are experiencing, I'm sure many would want to know, how would you define your coaching philosophy at this level from high school to college now?
That's a great question. TJ Kasaki, he was the head soccer men's coach at LIU, and now he's at Bard College. He was my professor when I was at LIU, and I learned a lot from his teaching, his coaching philosophies and how he does things. And it's always about how you build a successful program is building it from the ground on up. The first year was kind of like doing it with where we're having fun and you know, doing it for numbers. But, you know, now it's important that, you know, we do want to have fun and we do want to have a successful program. So in order to do that, we have to do it at a slow, mundane pace. And that's how I am as a person. I'm very patient. When I was a teacher, I was very patient. When I was a program director at a facility for disabled people, I was patient. And I'm using those philosophies and other situations to my benefit, whether I was a student, whether I was a teacher, or whether I was a program director, all those things are coming into play. And I remember when I was working in all those different positions, I was like, I really want to coach. I really want to be a head coach one day at the collegiate level. And I always wonder, like, why isn't that happening for me? But, you know, at that time, I didn't realize that all those things were kind of like helping me and facilitating me into being more patient. I'm using those experiences to help with our student athletes now. So for us, it's all about being patient and being methodical at the same time and seeing the reward at the end of the tunnel. Not everybody may win the gold, but for me, when I see them cross the line and they're smiling and they're happy, that means the world to me as a person, as a coach.
What's one final note you would want our listeners to know about your programs?
We are a program of very family oriented. I treat my student athletes not only as athletes, but as people. They are people outside of our space. So, you know, I push mental health awareness for our athletes first and foremost. Our school has very good resources for mental health awareness. That's why we don't have practice on Wednesdays. We never have practice on Wednesdays because that's their day to kind of like focus on their schoolwork, focus on their personal lives, focus on their mental health. I see a therapist every other Tuesday. So that's important for me to grow as a person. And then that will help them grow as people. The one thing about us and about our program is that we all try to stick together. We all try to be one as a family. And that's important to me as a head coach.
The Dolphins are back in action at the ECC Cross Country Championships at Sunken Meadow State Park in Kings Park, New York, next Saturday, October 25th. Big thanks for being here, Coach.
Yeah, thank you.
The East Coast Conference has partnered with Collegiate Travel Network to create ECCTravel.com, a travel booking platform designed to offer new personal and professional lodging options for ECC fans, alumni, and all travelers. The new platform provides hotel discounts up to 50% off with almost all global hotel chains and is customized to help ECC fans, alumni, and all travelers save on lodging expenses. The site offers exceptional consumer value while providing an avenue to financially support the league and its member institutions. Visit ecctravel.com today. Our final guest on this week's episode is DeYouville University women's soccer senior Chandra Phillips, whose story is such a testament to the power of service, the value of accessible healthcare, and the ripple effects of just giving back. I'm proud to welcome her to the East Coast Conference podcast this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Chandra, I'd like for us to focus on your trip to Panama, of course, and your upcoming trip to Belize. But to do that, we need to roll back a little bit. So back to this past summer, your research into outreach programs led you to Global Brigades. So explain to our listeners, first off, what is Global Brigades?
Yeah, so Global Brigades is a nonprofit organization, and essentially what they do is they go into struggling communities in Central America and Western Africa. They have like a holistic model, which is what kind of drew me into them. They attack different approaches to the sustainability of a community. So the part of the organization that I went with is called Global Medical Brigades. They kind of tackle the medical side and providing healthcare. I know there's students that go in and develop water systems and stuff like that, more infrastructure-based stuff. They kind of are a multifaceted approach, and that's what kind of drew me in, because I know that some of these medical trip kind of programs, they go in and they do it and then they leave, and then it's still, the community is still left with like a struggling system. And the whole point of this organization is that they are utilizing members within the community to actually establish something that's going to be able to be maintained over the years. And so they go in and they change communities within the areas. So I went to Panama. So we were in a couple of communities within Panama, and then they kind of move around and establish it in different areas.
Was there anyone or anything that inspired you to initially join Global Brigades?
My dad went to school for nursing at Queen's University in Canada. And with that, he ended up doing like a similar thing with other classmates. They were in Guyana for, I think he went and worked there for over the 2 summers. So he was there for quite a while. But even just like him having that experience, like he talked about it like when I was younger, not in like very much detail, but I always thought like that would be really cool, like way to honestly get travel into. I mean, I'd love to travel like more around the world and like helping communities while you're at it. Doesn't seem like there's a better thing to do.
Your trip to Panama, you talked a little bit about that before. Tell us more. What other students did you go with? What were your specific responsibilities, etc.?
From my school, it was just me, but I went with students from Xavier University of Louisiana, and then also Appalachian State University. It was a group of us. We were pre-med, pre-dental. There's a lot of pharmacy students that came with us. Anyone kind of going to the healthcare field. And we were in Panama for a week. So we did 3 days of clinic. 2 of the days were in the same community, and then the last one was in a different community. The first 2 days, so we'd rotate throughout different areas of the clinic. So I was in triage for one of the days. I was in the dental area, and then I was in medical consultations. And then there's also like a data center where we take kind of all the paper charts and upload them into the database. There was a couple doctors from Panama and a dentist from Panama. And so we were just kind of assisting them. I'd say my favorite area was the triage, because I actually got to take blood pressures. I got to do vitals and stuff like that. And I really like that hands-on aspect. The first 2 days, we probably brought in around 90 patients around there. And then the last day, we actually, it was over 100, quite a bit. And we also did like community surveys and stuff to see kind of what things communities like really needed. Our main topic was reproductive health. So we were just asking about things that they had access to, like whether they were able to get information on menstrual care, like stuff like that. It was actually kind of crazy because we interviewed quite a bit of women. And something that came up was just how difficult it was to get menstrual products for them. And like, that's the biggest thing I think that a lot of people faced in this community, was that just like to get to anywhere with medical supplies, medical care, like it was quite a distance. Majority of them don't have cars, so they got to pay for a bus, and that kind of takes money out of their pocket for food or like any necessities. So then things like tampons and pads, like that goes away, and they aren't able to get access to those things. And I think that just like one of my biggest takeaways, like from trip in general, is just like how grateful I am to be in a situation where that's not even something I really think about, is like how long it's going to take to get to the grocery store. How am I going to pay to get the things I need? That's like not something that even comes to my conscience, because there's the pharmacy right down the road, like stuff like that. It's just like, yeah.
Your second trip is on deck as you plan to go to Belize this December. What will this trip look like for you?
So this is similar. First trip, I was unable to bring a couple students from my school, but hopefully this time I'm going to be bringing a couple people alongside me. It'll be pretty similar, I think. It'll just be similar kind of deal, but just in Belize, which will be nice though, because what I wish is that I knew more Spanish going to Panama, because obviously I got like so much out of the trip, but in terms of being able to actually like converse with the patients, like, and like kind of hear their stories like from them, I think I would have gotten a lot more out of it. But in Belize, it's English speaking, so hopefully I'll actually be able to kind of hear more of their stories when I'm directly talking to them.
The trip to Belize then will just give you another level of kind of communication and connection with them.
No, exactly. Yeah. And in Panama, we did have like translators, and actually, a lot of the students that came with us, not a lot, but I'd say like maybe five or six of the students who came with us, they did know Spanish. So we had quite a bit of people like to help translate and everything. But in terms of actually being able to have like a proper conversation with patients and stuff, like that'll be a nice change for sure.
Currently a biology major at DeVille University. How do you feel these outreach trips are going to help you in your career pursuit of becoming a surgeon?
I just think like overall doing stuff like this where you're just seeing the world, opening your eyes to like the different healthcare situations that people are in, like it can only just make you have better empathy for your own patients and just in general, just show you like the different situations that people are in and like you may not have been exposed to. When you're caring for your patients, being able to really put yourself in their shoes or things that they may have experienced. Being able to get the hands-on experience doing medical things like taking blood pressure and stuff like that all puts towards the my like patient interaction hours that I can put on a resume for medical school applications, like all that.
After Belize, are there any other outreach trips that you'd like to make in the future?
When I was in Panama, I was definitely like, this is something I'd want to do, like when I'm actually a fully trained doctor, like to actually be able to come and do that. Obviously, as a student, someone who hasn't actually gone through any proper medical training, like the scope of what I'm able to do is so limited. But with being a doctor, like being able to actually go and do stuff like that, whether it's do surgery for people who need it, like I think that would be like really cool and it'd make me feel like I made like a really big impact on a community, yeah, for sure.
Well, sounds like you already have been making a pretty big impact. Panama, Belize, and beyond. That's current DeVille Saint, future surgeon, and just all around amazing person, Chandra Phillips. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap on season one, episode six of the East Coast Conference podcast. You can stream, download, and subscribe through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the official ECC website at eccsports.org/podcast. For Molloy University's Julia Zalta, the College of Staten Island's Akil St. Louis, and DeVille University's Chandra Phillips, this is Nikki Philpott saying we'll see you next time on the East Coast Conference podcast.